And one question I've had is when you have this, your reps survive for the statute of limitations. What does that mean? And so I don't typically like a provision because of the vagaries around that, but if it's a breach of a financial statement rep or tax or whatever, you've got all these different statute of limitations. If, I don't know if you've litigated that or had to deal with that at all, anybody on the panel? I don't like this, statute of limitations, whatever it is.
Well, I mean, you're building potential ambiguity into your provision, right? You're going to have to refer to, you know, what state's law is going to control the agreement. Mm-hmm. Then you're going to have to go and determine what's the applicable statute of limitations, whether it's New York or Delaware or Texas. And so, to your point, the more clarity you can provide there and the less reference to other things outside the document, mm-hmm. I always find the better position that you're in.
Which can be limiting or expansive, right? I mean, if you mentioned tax claims, and if you're not really sure where, you know, what state, is it sales, we don't really know what the statute, I mean, come on, do we really know what the statute of limitation is and all of that stuff? And so you're preserving the point, and so the more specificity will, you know, certainly benefit mm-hmm. the seller, the less specificity in this case may well benefit the buyer.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that should be certainly something that is being thought about when these provisions are being negotiated. I think, you know, you mentioned, Rob, the question about, well, the claim hasn't been made yet, but we kind of know it's out there. And so does the language of the provisions in the indemnification article that talks about how to submit a claim and when you can submit a claim, well, is it really limited to receipt of a third-party claim, or is it, or does it include, you know, you're reasonably aware, or you're aware of a claim, you're aware of a claim that may be indemnifiable, right? Is there room in there when you look to the language of the contract? And I think as M&A lawyers, that's something we need to be really mindful of, in that language that is not just boilerplate. We really need to think about how it works.
Well, and to that point, you know, another provision that I have seen in a lot of agreements is that the indemnity will provide the indemnitor with notice, you know, within a reasonable period of time or reasonably promptly upon discovering a potential claim. And then I have seen that modified to say, but the failure to do so is not a waiver of that claim unless it puts the indemnitor in a position that it has waived either a defense or a right that it may have otherwise been able to assert, but for the failure for you know, of a timely notice, I guess I should say. Mm-hmm. So all these things are fluid, to say the least.
I wonder, Brian, if we can shift a little bit to the procedure for assumption of defense of a claim, because this is one that I've struggled with. You know, as a buyer, I'm likely to be the one who is bringing a claim for indemnification for a third-party claim. And I've always said, you know, look, I want to be able to control that claim as much as I can, and so handing over the reins of the defense of a claim, I want to make that as narrow as possible. So one of the things I often try to insert in there is, you know, I want to make sure that in order to hand over the reins of the claim, I want the indemnifying party to acknowledge in writing that they are responsible for the claim, because my nightmare, and maybe this is just a corporate person's nightmare and it would never happen in real life, is that as the indemnified party, I hand over the defense to the indemnifying party, and then they ultimately say they run the defense into the ground, and then they say, oh, by the way, we're disclaiming responsibility to indemnify you, so now we've lost the case, or we've run it into the ground, and now we're not going to indemnify you. Is what I'm looking for as the buyer, that I want them to acknowledge that they are responsible for the indemnification claim, is that a reasonable ask? It's almost like, I've heard sellers say, you can't expect us to do that, we have to reserve our rights. And then we kind of get in this battle about it. Is that a negotiation worth having, or is this something that I've cooked up in my head?
Yeah, no, I mean, look, if I were in the buyer's position, absolutely, I would want a written confirmation that yes, we're agreeing to assume the defense. We agree that this is subject to the indemnification provision. To your point, is that likely to happen? Almost never. You know, most of these have a period of time, generally, in which the receiving party, the potential indemnitor, has, you know, 30 days to accept or reject a claim. And so that's not to say that they're not going to accept it, but even when they accept it, the situations I've seen, it's subject to a whole litany of reservation of rights.
Right.
We don't know enough about the claim. We reserve the right for a judicial determination after the fact that this was not subject to the, you know, the indemnification provision. And so that doesn't give you a whole lot of clarity. But yes, I mean, that's the perfect scenario, right? Is if you can somehow build that in, and I don't know how you do that, but what I think you can do to try to kind of back to the control, whether it's a buyer or a seller, in my personal experience, I have not had a client that has been willing to cede control over a piece of litigation, whether they are the indemnitor or the indemnity. Even if the potential exposure has been acknowledged by the indemnitor, the indemnity, in most cases the buyer, still wants to have control or some semblance of control over how the litigation is going to be run. Certainly major decisions as to litigation strategy, motion practice, certainly settlement. And so some of these things you can build into your indemnification provision, settlement obviously being a key one. And there are certain instances, some examples I'll share in a second, where the buyer may actually have zero interest in the ultimate result of the litigation from a financial perspective. And in particular, they know that the seller is gonna pay for whatever the judgment is. However, there are certain business concerns that are gonna drive the buyer's insistence that they be involved in this particular piece of litigation, for instance.